the anguish of lost love, the desolation of desertion, the bitterness of betrayal. These are terrible emotions for anyone to endure. The nagging question, what more could I have done? The head-shaking insistence, see how hard I tried. Those insensitive people who purvey the callous myth that, of course, there are two sides to every story and no one is innocent, never allow the popular wisdom to give permission or recognise the truth that someone just decided one day to be a complete selfish git and to be a shameless, arrogant, blind person in how they lived their life. Blame, apparently, must be shared, so the cruel lie persists. And so the pain is pushed in deeper, the stake driven in harder. Lost love, a humiliating and a lonely business. And not something you would really expect to find the master of the universe, the all-powerful God, aloof in his majesty, serene in his eternal power, ever experiencing, ever feeling all the raw emotion and terrible hurt of that abandonment and betrayal. Yet we find that image is the very one Jeremiah chooses to express and clarify the failure and idolatry of the people of Israel and the effect their delinquency has on God. My people have exchanged me, the God who brought them honour, for gods that can do nothing for them. They have turned away from me, the spring of fresh water, and they have dug cisterns, cracked cisterns, that can hold no water at all. He does hurt. His heart does break. He, as it were, shakes his head in disbelief as he recounts how much he's done, how hard he's tried, how endless and unswerving was his commitment to them. And all for what? All for this? None of it seems to have counted for them. His greatest miracle, the Exodus, liberating them from the chains and leading them through the inhospitable wilderness, the dry places and the terrors, the wasteland, where hope would have died had the Lord not sustained and upheld his people. And all for what? All for what? Because access to water is so easy for us, turn on a tap and there it is, simple, painless. It's hard for us to get inside the power of those pictures, to sense the absolute life-threatening vulnerability of people baking under the relentless sun without shelter or refreshment, doomed to die unless the Lord would provide them with an oasis, a wellspring of hope. And that glorious, song-filled, drenching, quenching moment when they reach the life-giving stream, they sup deep, they soak long, and hope is rekindled. So by any reckoning, he had given them it all. Deliverance, sustenance, settlement and security in a land rich in possibility, an end to the agony, new beginnings. And they threw it all right back in his face. Unbelievable, yet true. So what was the problem? Was there something he forgot to do, omitted to provide for them, some earnest of his love that he neglected to demonstrate? Jeremiah expresses the utter astonishment of God that his people should have so quickly and belligerently turned their backs on him. Why, and oh the irony, even those who follow false gods are true to them. The pagans might be deluded, but at least they're consistent. No other nation has ever changed its gods, even though they were not real, says the Bible. The children of Israel, on the other hand, grab the blessings and then laugh in the face of the God who has rescued them. And the end result of their rebellion? Well, talk about cutting off your nose to spite your face. Not only do they refuse the soul refreshing presence of God in their lives, but they create a whole false, shallow set of standards and lifestyles that will always leave them vulnerable to disappointment and emptiness. That will, in fact, in the end, leave them with nothing. As the cracked containers of their man-made morality leak and spill life on the ground where the arid desert drinks it up hungrily in a moment. A bad move. A poor choice. A costly blunder. And Jeremiah, in language best described as undiplomatic, tells them so. No wonder Jeremiah is not voted most popular prophet in the polls, for he takes the truth and he shoves it in their faces, dangles the shocking, shameful reality of what they have done right before their eyes. He declares his uncompromising and uncomfortable message and cares nothing about his ratings. It's not that he wants the people to love him. He wants the people to love their God, first and foremost, in a way that generates obedience and change and gratitude. The great prophets of then and now are prepared to take risks with their own status. They care nothing about reputation or personal advancement, which is just as well since they will enjoy neither. No one likes being told the harsh truth about their derelictions, being confronted by their sins and reminded of all their compromises with what is wrong. No one's going to thank you for that kind of candour. So who will dare speak the prophetic word in our time? Call our nation and our church back to obedience, a reawakening of our first love. Whatever happened to that? Western Europe, once steeped in faith, has drifted far from the faith of our fathers, choosing instead the shabby rags of man-made morality and the shaky, unstable foundations of a life built on secular and humanistic commitments to pleasure, materialism and trivia. Preoccupied with C-list celebrities, bread and circuses, getting more stuff. Who is going to speak to a culture that has sold its birthright of truth and meaning for trinkets, baubles and shiny beads? For be warned, dare to be that voice and watch the media hound you as an eccentric, a throwback, a joke. Listen to the alternative comedians mock anyone who might presume to challenge the precious citadels of modern culture and question the standards, the inadequate thinking, the facile and shallow options offered as a lifestyle choice for a generation. Be the voices that call the people back to God, and listen to the rumble of laughter. Feel the arrows of criticism pierce your soul. It's what happens to prophets. So persecuted they the prophets who were before you. Or who will call the church back to its first loyalty and love? Challenge the unhealthy preoccupation with bureaucratic status-seeking, the want of vision, the hesitant, faithless steps with which the church stumbles towards the future. Well, dare to ask the individual Christian how their spiritual love life is going, how close their walk with God, what has happened, where the love has gone. Ask that question, bold, direct and unwavering, and see how soon people drift out of your circle. It's what happens. The people of Israel didn't want to listen to Jeremiah challenge their complacencies. And the truth is, we squirm, resist and stop up our ears when that same prophetic questioning is directed towards our society, our church, our life. And the shocking possibility is raised that our first love has gone cold. Our commitment has become a shadow of its early promise. Our loyalty has been compromised. Jeremiah's stiletto of truth hurt then. And confronting our own quality of faith and our sometimes threadbare love for God hurts too. And regardless of what some might wish to believe, there are not two sides to this story. He has not changed. He has not changed. His love and commitment and giving remain constant. So if there's a problem, then we are somewhere in the heart of that problem. We are the rogue factor in the equation. And the irony is that we are robbing ourselves of the refreshing joy of his presence and his blessing. Robbing ourselves. The start of our recovery is the recognition that as a society, as a church, as a Christian, there is an issue here for us. As a society, in our national and political life, in our cultural tone and priorities, we need to rediscover the important things that enhance, enrich, and dignify our common life. As a church, we need to focus less on structure, status, and survival, and instead find ways to rekindle love, trust, quietness. Find that transforming place to be with our God. And in our personal walk, when we take stock, we need to acknowledge that there has been drift. See that we are in dry places when we could enjoy the spirit-refreshing delights of God. Then we can find reborn in us, not routine, but devotion. Not habit, but commitment. Because if we silence that uncomfortable prophetic voice of Jeremiah and settle for an easy life without challenge or question, if we reach a tacit agreement not to speak about sacrifice and cost, passion for God, and opt instead for a mild, innocuous Christianity, then the conclusion is inevitable. The well dries up, the soul shrivels, faith grinds to a halt in the desert sand. We will not allow that to happen. We will not allow that to happen.